Good evening to our audience on American Muslim 360 on Blog Talk Radio, and welcome to Talk Unchained. I'm your host, Marlon Aldridge. Today, I will be doing a rebroadcast of American Indians, Current Issues and Debates with my special guest, Guy Jones. But before I start the show, I'd like to say goodbye. This is my last show here on American Muslim 360. I have enjoyed myself, and I have definitely enjoyed the audience here at AM 360 and the community-wide. Sure, I am hopeful that I will be back sometime in the future. I hope you enjoy the show. Over some interesting facts about American Indians, and I use the term American Indians over Native Americans because the term Native American does not usually refer to Native Hawaiians, Alaskan Natives such as Aleut, Yupik, or Inuit peoples. Most indigenous people in the U.S. are or use American Indians, while most indigenous people in Canada use First Nations. Native Americans or indigenous Americans are often used for people in both countries. I actually prefer the term American Indian because most of us who are born here would now be considered indigenous. So I choose to use the term American Indians, and so the title of my show is American Indians, Current Issues and Debates. What are some other facts about American Indians? The term Ishi is widely known as the last wild Indian in America. He lived from 1860 to 1916. He lived most of his life outside modern culture after his tribe, the Yahi of the Yana group, became extinct in the late 1800s because of the California gold rush. He lived alone in the wilderness after his family died. In 1911, starving and with nowhere to go, he walked out of the wilderness into the town of Oroville, where he would later be studied by anthropologists. Can you believe that? Later to be studied by anthropologists. I don't know if you know this, but by the time, the second time that Christopher Columbus had arrived to the Americas, over half of the native population had been destroyed by disease, European diseases. We're going to go over some more interesting facts about American Indians and Native Americans through the show. Of course, we want you to participate with us and have some questions for our call-in guests. I did want to take this time while we're waiting for Guy Jones to call into the studio. I wanted to mention that for our host, the AM 360 host, we are having a host education and development training each month, the third Sunday of each month from 6 to 7 p.m. From 6 to 7:30 p.m., we have host education and development training. So if you have not been participating in those conference calls, we need to make sure that you check the calendar out and participate in those so that we can upgrade the quality of our programming and grow our audience as well. So put that in on your calendars, host education and development training. The first is the third Sunday of each month from 6 to 7:30 p.m. What are some other interesting facts? How about the Sequoia tree is named in honor of Cherokee leader Sequoia, who helped his people developed an alphabet. And many of you probably know this one, I hope, but the term Indian originated with Christopher Columbus, who thought he had landed in the East Indies. He called the indigenous people Indians. Native Americans and First Nations people speaking a language of the Algonquin group were the first to meet English explorers, and consequently many words from these languages entered English. For example, caribou, which means snow shoveler, chipmunk, red squirrel, moccasin, moose, muskrat, possum, white, mean white dog, papoose, or baby, pecan, which of course is a nut, powwow, to dream or to have a vision, raccoon, skunk, to urinate, plus fox, squaw, toboggan, totem, wigwam, and woodchuck are some other names that Native Americans put into the English lexicon. What are some other interesting facts? The word avocado, I love avocados, by the way, is it the Nuthal or Central Mexican Aztec Indian language for, check this out, testicle. And half of the names of U.S. states are derived from Amerindian words such as Arizona, Connecticut, Kentucky, and Missouri. Many Native American words have entered the English language, such as chia, chili, chocolate, coyote, guacamole, mesquite, piat, tamale, tomato, abalone, bayou, cannibal, chinook, manatee, poncho, and potato. I had read somewhere that half of the vegetables that we eat come from Native Americans. The word barbecue is from the Arawakan Indian language, meaning framework of sticks. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints believe that Native Americans derived from the Middle East and were Jewish in origin. Native Americans are referred to as Lamanites in their scripture called the Book of Mormon. The Indian Citizenship Act, or the Snyder Act of 1924, granted full U.S. citizenship to Americans indigenous people. Let me say that again. American Indians were granted full U.S. citizenship only in 1924, and it was enacted in part due to the recognition of thousands of Native Americans who served in World War I. Interesting facts about Native Americans. Here are some others. Native Americans have been living on the American continent since about 12,000 B.C. They were not a single nation, but a rich variety of cultures, peoples, and languages. Some historians believe people have been living in South America for more than 30,000 years. I want to put that in context to the scriptures, the Bible, which some people believe that the Adam and Eve story is only about 4,000 to 5,000 years old. In the early 1600s, five tribes who were former enemies formed the Iroquois Confederacy, an all-male council who was elected for life made decisions. However, women had the right to fire any counselor. Benjamin Franklin, co-author of the Constitution, thought the idea of a government like the Iroquois Confederacy could be used by the English colonies. The eagle on the U.S. shield is the Iroquois bald eagle, also a symbol for the Iroquois. word Seuss was adopted by French explorers who picked it up from the Chippewa tribe. Seuss is the Chippewa word for enemy, who actually were the Lakota people. So the Seuss are actually the Lakota, a name that means where the people of peace dwell. Where the people of peace dwell. I noticed this word peace shows up in a lot of cultures, and you'll see it attributed or in some way embedded into the names that they call themselves. So people love peace. And we think about Islam or Muslim, one who is of peace. The Choctaw, Cherokee, Creek, Chickasaw, and Seminole tribes were called the five civilized tribes by early white settlers. They were considered more civilized because of the similarities between their cultures and those of the Europeans, such as planned villages and farms, and some Native Americans were wealthy enough to even own slaves. Pretty interesting facts here. Utah is named for the Utes, a people who lived on the edge of the plains and the Great Basin. Oklahoma is from the Choctaw, Oklahoma, which means red people. In both the U.S. and Canada, government sought to eradicate Native cultures and identities both militarily and through the aggressive assimilation regimes of boarding schools. So not acculturation, but assimilation. And I'm thinking, when I think about that, I'm a big Star Trek fan, and I noticed that I'm talking about old Star Trek. I'm talking about James T. Kirk, who, in my opinion, was a intergalactic playboy and a butt whipper at the same time. I don't care what culture he went into, somebody was going to get a butt whipper. James T. Kirk, as intergalactic playboy and butt whipper. I love that show because it was able to project into the future what actually is happening to today. We're looking at integration of all types of cultures. We're looking at mass exploration, and we're even talking about the commandeering of others' cultures through colonialism. And these other systems that came after that, we're talking about the mandate system, which is a product of the League of Nations. Still waiting for a guy to show up in the studio. As a matter of fact, let's take another quick station break, and we'll be back with our discussion, American Indians, Current Issues and Debate.
Born of Dayton, Ohio, been in Ohio since 1981, and been involved my whole life in matters of relating to, you know, social justice, if you want to say that. But, you know, just trying to go and, you know, survive in this world, so... That's kind of like a little bit of everything in a nutshell. So,
well, I'd like to thank you for joining our show today as we're going to discuss some of the current issues and debates surrounding American Indians. And we have a national audience, so I'm expecting, or we should expect, some phone calls for our viewers. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Guy Jones. Guy Jones, what tribe are you from?
I am Hunkpapa Lakota, and in the history books, they teach you to call us Sioux, S-I-O-U-X, which is an abbreviation of a French and Anishinaabe word implying low-down snakes.
Ooh.
And, you know, so one of the things that when you begin to look at terminology in regards to Native people, most of the time, the terminology, the names and labels used are derogatory in nature. but it's not our nature, it's their nature.
Okay, okay. At the beginning of the show, we were going over some interesting facts about Native Americans and or American Indians, and we'll be doing that throughout the show. Right now, I want to go ahead and get into our discussion, and I'd like to know, what would you contend are the major issues confronting American Indian people, and explain?
Some of the issues concerning American Indian people is the fact that in today's times, most people are totally oblivious to the fact that in regards to what the struggles of Native people today evolve around are treaty rights. You know, most people don't realize that this country is an occupied country. And the reason they are here and the reason, you know, that they are on the land that they're on was all negotiated through treaties. And the rights that we have under those treaties, you know, of course, you know, our relationship with the government. We are a sovereign nation that exists within a nation. So politically, economically, a lot of the things in regards evolve around our relationship with the government. And it has nothing to do with, you know, in regards to other aspects as far as, you know, economy, politics, you know, it has nothing to do with that. There's treaty rights, and that's one of the things is that by contract, and I mean, you know, we've gone to court number of times, and each time the Supreme Court says that the United States must honor its treaties, and you know, and then they haven't been doing that. I mean, they haven't done it since day one.
Wow, that's something. And in terms of the number of recognized tribes, I read somewhere where there were over 370 or so recognized tribes. Does that number sound about correct to you, or is it smaller?
It's actually higher. There's like 567 federally recognized, but then there's hundreds of state recognized tribes as well.
Okay.
And whereas the states recognize tribal entities. So, and I mean, that number there, I don't have the exact number, but it's pretty close to 300.
Okay. Any other major issues confronting American Indians besides treaty rights?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, it's heavy. When you talk about poverty, crime, I mean, you know, it's every social ill that exists in this country today. I mean, you know, the top of the list are Native people. And I mean, you know, in regards to, you know, everything else, I mean, when you look at the 10 poorest counties in the United States, you know, three of those counties, the top three, are reservations in South Dakota.
Wow.
And I mean, you know, so, you know, when you start looking at that and what is, you know, when you talk about poverty, what are you talking about? You know, that's homelessness, you know, that, and, you know, that's unemployment, you know, that's, you know, you're just a number of things. I mean, you know, it's, and a lot of times in those situations, there's, you know, domestic violence is high, violence against women, you know, alcohol and drugs. And I mean, drugs are really, really hitting the reservation hard. And it's not so much heroin, but it's more meth than anything.
Now, in terms of production, when we think about the reservations, are they engaged in a lot of production? I would assume no, based on what you just said. But give me your input in terms of producing or manufacturing. What is it that many of the American Indian tribes are noted for in terms of manufacturing?
Well, you got, when you look at the Choctaw Nation down in Mississippi, I mean, you know, they got involved. They got contracts with General Motors and some of the other major corporations, and their employment is high. Hallmark, you know, but the biggest thing is that some of the reservations that are successful all evolve around the casinos. And, you know, and it's like not every reservation, a lot of people have this misconceptions about casinos. Not all, every reservation has casinos, nor do they have bingo halls. And, you know, and it's like, and you take, for example, my reservation, we have casinos on my reservations. But, you know, when you look at the locale, and I mean, you know, most reservations are in very isolated areas, so they don't see, you know, you don't see quite the number that you would expect it from casino. But when you look at people like, you know, when you look at other casinos like up in the Shakopees or even the Pequots up in Connecticut, I mean, they're in quite heavily populated areas, so their revenue is a lot higher, and of course, and they produce a lot more. But you know, one of the things is this is that they themselves, and even at that, economically, I mean, you know, that there's a big change that is happening in the sense that more and more Native people are becoming more and more involved in understanding how capitalism works. And so then that's a huge improvement in a sense, because more and more people are becoming, and especially the reservations are becoming more self-determined. And that's, you know, they're making their own decisions. And that's where there's a great deal of difficulty, especially on the state levels, because they don't want any competition. You look at reservations in South Dakota. The Cheyenne River Reservation in South Dakota is one of the windiest, besides it's second to Chicago, but in regards to wind. And they were looking at, and they had made arrangements with a company out of Sweden to bring in windmills and start producing electricity. But it was the state who intervened, and the state intervened on behalf of public utilities, and they, you know, put up roadblocks at every way. I mean, in the sense that, you know, you have to have an environmental impact study, you have to have all of these different studies done. And while the studies are getting done, the state in regards worked with public utilities and the local utility companies, and they across the river built these windmills. So now they're producing wind power.
It would be interesting to study some of these treaties, because when I think about what you just said, I know in the U.S. Constitution we have a 10th Amendment, so that anything that is not reserved to the federal government is left to the state. And it seems like to me that in these treaties, there seems like there's no provision such as a 10th Amendment and no clear delineation as to what are the rights, privileges, and powers of the United States as opposed to the rights, privileges, and powers of each one of the tribes. That seems to be the case there. Now, I haven't seen any of these treaties, and I would imagine back then that they weren't as forward-looking when many of these treaties were created. They weren't forward-looking. But having said that, having knowledge of the U.S. Constitution, those are very forward-looking when you imagine that anything that wasn't reserved for the federal government was left to the states. So it seems to me as though the states provided no provision, or at least the federal government, maybe operating on behalf of the states, provided no provision like a 10th Amendment. And I have read that most of these treaties have been violated.
And I mean, you know, you want to see something really interesting, you got to look at what happened in the state of Ohio, because several years ago, some of the removed tribes, there's historically there's 9 tribes in Ohio, and they were moved out of the area. Most of them ended up in Oklahoma, but when they look back at the treaties, those tribes were wanting to come back into Ohio, and one of the first things that everybody got all panicky about was the fact that these tribes were going to come back and open up casinos. So the state in regards took measures to go, and you know, they don't recognize the entity of, and they don't recognize the entity as far as in regards to the tribe. So they didn't have no government to government relationship with the tribe, and they weren't recognizing these treaties. But in the meantime, while that was through the whole legal process and everybody talking, going back and forth as far as the legality that were involved, the state in turn turned around and legalized gambling, and they opened up their casinos.
Isn't that something? Isn't that something?
I mean, you know, just up the road here in Botkins, Ohio, the city, the town of Botkins, and the county, they went so far as inviting the tribes in. They invited the Shawnee tribes in and hosted them, and were willing to, you know, provide everything necessary to, you know, open up casinos. But once again, you know, the state intervened.
state? What? Who was the? Are we talking about the present governor? Or are you talking? Is
this this is back when in the days. If I'm not mistaken, Celeste was in office during that time.
Okay. So this was a little while back then.
Yeah.
Okay. Who are the major national organizations that advocate on behalf of American Indians, and how would you rate them?
Oh, God, you got the National Congress of American Indians. You got, the various different law organizations. I mean, you got even organizations like the American Indian Movement, which everybody considers. They were once at one time considered one of the top 10 terrorist organizations in the United States. But, you have a number of organizations that are really stepping up and coming out and advocating for, the rights of Native people. You got the American Indian Civil Rights Organizations that different law organizations that are, trying to think of the one that's out of Denver, that's the Native American Rights out of Denver, Colorado.
Okay. Now, what was the name of the one that you said was the terrorist group?
Oh, the American Indian Movement.
American Indian Movement. They were the, comparable to the Black Panther Party. And
yes,
were basically highlighted by the government, especially during the 60s. Mm-hmm. Are there any figures from that movement that you can highlight for our audience? Who were the major figures in the American Indian movement?
Well, one of the founders, Dennis Banks, he's still alive, and, he's still advocating and doing stuff in regards to social justice within Native American communities and such. But, then there's a lot of the organizations that currently today, it really doesn't have quite the impact. The American Indian Movement doesn't have quite the impact that it once had, mainly for the fact that you see a tremendous amount of, I don't want to say converts, but you got, people that are coming in that are non-Indians who are coming in and changing the whole complexion of the movement itself. I mean, it's, you got all these, we refer to them as wannabes. And then you also got, those that are coming in and who have, you got wannabes, you got converts, you got, people coming in appropriating the culture, appropriating spirituality. You've got a number of things that are happening that are very, detrimental to the movement itself.
That seems like the normal course of business. Now, I'm going to go as far as to say that seems as though American Indians and African Americans are undergoing some of the same challenges as it relates to culture and social integration.
And that was one of the things is that years and years ago, when I first came into the scene in Dayton, back then, you had Reverend Fox, you had Raleigh Trammell, you had Jesse Gooding, you had a number of individuals that were, quite visible and out there. And then one of the things I kept asking them is like, why are you all wanting equality? And that's the thing of it is that Native people, we've never wanted equality. But we do have, we have similarities in the fact that, we deal with certain, aspects of the, of this society, of the mainstream society. And, so when we look at those issues, yes, we have similarities, but our experiences are different. And that,
yeah.
And that's one of the things is that, I keep emphasizing to people, just take a look, because these are the things that have happened. I mean, several people in this area, I said, when they started talking about the prison to pipeline, I said, they've been doing that on reservations for years. Mm-hmm. I said, it all began with this here. I said, it all began with this whole campaign, I said, which goes back into the 1800s. I said, you kill the Indian, save the man. And I said, and that's one of the things is that, what you basically do, I said, is that, that Indian, I said, and most people don't realize that the Indian that most people are familiar with is the Indian that was created by mainstream. because most people are totally oblivious to who we are. That's just like, you know, I say I'm Hunkapapa Lakota because Hunkapapa is my responsibility. Lakota is my language. And that is, you know, that's one of that's who I am. Now, most people today don't know that aspect. Most people today don't even know or recognize terminology and names. And in regards to all of this, because they're so, have been so indoctrinated into mainstream ideology, into the cultural and spiritual identity of the original people. A lot of times people don't even think we exist.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. Names are very powerful, and in many cultures, when you are given a name, that's a very deliberate attempt to try to establish you in some type of way, to establish your character in some type of way. So people really need to be cautious when they name their children. I think that I think that's very important, and I've seen that in cultures too. The names truly do have meaning, and we need to be very careful and deliberate when we name things. So that's I agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
On that. So I wanted to get back to this idea of equality. Now, go into a little bit more detail about that. What you said, why do blacks want equality? Let's talk about that, because I think that's very germane to our discussions today, especially to our audience. So I want you to speak a little bit more about that. Go into a little bit more depth about what do you mean by that.
You know, one of the things is this, is that it is like, why would you want to take on the, you know, identity of those that have been in the forefront in regards to oppression, in regards to a number of things that have happened in this sense? Why would you accept, not only accept their language, but accept their culture and the ideal of those that, you know, that's just like, you know, I always tell people, and I said, be mindful of this fact. I said, first of all, I said, I don't see nothing wrong with Christianity, but I said, but we really have to have a conversation about these Christians. And I said, and one of the things is that, and I see that happening, and I see that the other day this man got very upset with me in a sense that when he very proudly told me that he was Muslim, and I asked him if he was a convert. And he got upset with me because, you see, there's a part of all of these faiths. I mean, you know, even religions in a sense that, okay, so why would you want to go and take on this identity? Why can't you just be yourself? Let's talk about, you know, what happens within our communities. What is happening within our communities? That's just like, you know, I get so upset when people are talking about this food desert, and then the first thing they want to talk about, oh, we're going to get a food co-op in West Dayton. I'm like, wait a minute, that food co-op is right on the border. That food co-op is right on the border. I've come from the reservation. I'm familiar with border towns. I'm familiar with border economics. You know, you have individuals. I said, it's not, you don't have control. You don't have control of what's happening. And I said, and you have the illusion that you have control, but it's not. You don't have that control. I'm like, if they really want to do something about the food desert, they would put something on Gettysburg Avenue or over there on Hoover. You know, that's where it's at, in the heart of the community. Let's look at these changes, because these changes that have happened, you know, I've talked about these changes, you know, back. I remember Jesse Goody one time, he said, I didn't realize that, you know, that you didn't, your fortune teller, your future teller. He said, you know, you can see the future. And I said, no, this is something that I've lived through. I said, I come from a little tiny town in South Dakota. I said, 600 people. I said, in that town, we have 3 liquor stores. I said, we got 2 bars and 9 churches. I said, what does that tell you? I said, and that's one of the things that I just take a look at the community in West Dayton. You know, I said, you can go, and I said, and think about all of those aspects. And I said, and that's how I said, so, and I said, and you don't own them. None of those are yours. Yeah. So I said, why would you go? And I said, but the reality of this is that, I said, the equality, why would you want to go and be like that? Why are you assuming, you know, the theology? Why are you assuming the ideology and even the philosophy? I said, you know, I said, when you begin to look at that philosophically, I said, you know, these are some of the things that when you begin to look at how, as a community, philosophically, and I mean, you know, I spent some time in the early 70s because, you know, one of the first things that in the South, one of the first things that when I left the reservation in 1974, the first African-American that I ever met. And a lot of times, you know, people look at me and they say, oh, you got one of those Indian noses. No, this nose has been broken 7 times. And the first time it was ever broken was by a black man. And guess what I called him? And it was only then that I realized the depth of the indoctrination with which I had gone through. And I began to look at how we as a society have been indoctrinated. And we've even been to the point of acculturated and assimilated, and we've conformed. We think success, how we look at success, how we gauge success, you know, is through that, you know, have we really, in fact, you know, most people today don't realize how conformed they really are. And, you know, and it's like, and because, you know, I went and last year I met with some individuals in West Dayton. And I said, look at the number of churches in West Dayton. Now, I said, if every one of those churches committed $1,000, committed to raising $1,000, I said, we can build our own grocery store. I said, a grocery store there in West Dayton. I said, we could do that. And I said, and if every church does that, and I said, and once we get that grocery store up and going, we can train managers. We can train people in you know, how to run business. We could do our own training. We can do that, take care of and work within our own community. And I said, and that's something that the community will own. I said, if, you know, just when you just look at that. And you know what the response was?
What was that?
They laughed. They laughed. And they said, Guy, you know the black people ain't ever going to come together like that. And I said, that's the problem. Because I said, you believe that, and everybody else believes that. Why can't you believe in yourself? I said, and that's where, like, even as Indian people, I said, we have failed. We have failed in a sense that we can't believe in ourselves. As Indian people, as I said, and as an American Indian, I'm telling you, I said, we have to change this mentality. And I said, just take a look. Because what was happening at that time was Standing Rock, on Standing Rock, Ride Reservation. They put a call out because they said, enough is enough. The children on Standing Rock went to their mothers and said, enough. We want to have clean water for our children, and our rights as human beings is being violated. And they stood, and they put a call out, and thousands of people came to Standing Rock and camped on the ground to oppose corporate greed and this pipeline.
Give
and I mean, you know, people.
Give us the update on that, because as far as I know, that President Trump has allowed that to proceed. I know that the former President Obama had put a halt to that, but as far as I know, that President Trump has came in and that, and if I'm not mistaken, they're about finished with that pipeline, aren't they?
They are finished with that pipeline, and there is fuel flowing through that pipeline. And right now, but one of the things that have happened is this, is that it's finally going through the process and going through the courts, and the courts have come out back in support of Native people in the sense that saying that these entities, the Army Corps of Engineers, you know, Energy Transfer Partners, all in the state of North Dakota, all violated the process. They did not follow the process. There are certain processes that are in place that which they were supposed to prove in regards to not only, you know, the environment, but also to cultural rights. And, you know, in regards and who is involved with this process, because, you know, even though they say, well, Native people were involved in a process, no, what happened is that you all came to the reservations and said, this is what we are going to do. you know, the input that was put in place, you didn't allow that input. You only came to the reservation and said, this is what we're going to do to your land. And you know, and that's, I said, that's not the process. So the courts right now are looking at, and there's a hearing coming up August 7th, and at that time, the courts are going to decide whether or not they need to shut the pipeline down, and until they can complete the whole process and do the assessments the way that they were supposed to do the assessments. Because, see, one of the original route of the pipeline was to go north of Bismarck, North Dakota. But the community of Bismarck, North Dakota didn't want it because they said that if the water becomes contaminated, then that's their drinking source. That's their water source. So they proposed it moving south of the reservation to the south of Bismarck to the reservation. You know, so I said, you know, I said that right there, I said, you know, that, I said, is environmental racism. I said, you know, so I said, you all need to go and, you know, take a look at that and begin to understand these aspects in regards to how, you know, how and where we are at in regards to this society and the mainstream.
What is your prediction of the Supreme Court?
What am I predicting? I am hoping that, you know, that they go and, you know, side with the American Indian people and begin to, you know, force these corporations. Because, you know, one of the things is, that's just like, you know, what's happening down there at Oak Flats in Arizona. I mean, you know, that they're John McCain and all of them down there are, they opening up, you know, this land down there to copper mining. Well, you know, and it's to an Australian company. So here you got an Australian company coming into this country mining copper, and, you know, for their own corporate greed, for their own. But one of the things that I always be mindful of people, I said, look at what's happening here. I said, who gets that copper? I said, that copper, I said, one of the, you know, you have an entity, I said, in regards to that are developing nuclear energy. I said, copper is used in the cooling process in nuclear energy. And I said, and that's who that these people are selling it to.
Everything is about profit. Everything mm-hmm. is about profit. And I can tell you, in this country, we frown upon poor people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so this country is not meant for poor people. So poor people will always have their rights violated. Now, the sad part is that I don't care what institution it is. If it's a mainstream organization, you can just about guarantee that your rights are going to be violated if you don't have the power to withstand these particular types of forces. So I don't think it's going to go in the favor of American Indians concerning the Standing Rock and the pipeline. I don't think it's going to go in their favor. We're looking at a conservative court anyway, and I don't see one hand biting the other hand, especially since they're equal branches of government. So I don't really see that going in a favorable way, especially now during this era. My next show is going to be titled The Rise of Global Nationalism. And we see that not only in the United States, but we see it in other parts of the world as well. People are resisting this ideal of globalism, this unfettered trade across the different sovereign lines. And, you know, of course, the economists will make the excuse that it's better for us that we have unfettered trade because it brings the cost of goods down, but they're looking at numbers, see, and they're not looking at the lives that are being affected, jobs being displaced, especially overseas. And even in those countries, you end up with a lot of sweatshops and environmental problems that are going on, especially in the developing countries. They are basically becoming monocultures where and that's what we have in this country, too, where all they have is their labor. They don't really have anything else. They don't have resources in which they could use because they don't have strong armies to protect those resources. And they don't have governments that have an understanding of how to deal with these stronger countries such as the United States and France and the UK and even Russia for that matter. We don't have the wherewithal to be able to understand, like what you said. We have different value systems. We have different attitudes about this and that, and they want to control everything. And they pretty much, you know, I mentioned earlier in the show, I mentioned the League of Nations, you know, how they came up with the mandate system to replace this idea of colonialism. And they pretty much, the mandate system pretty much said that this is how they were going to share the other nations that were outside of the League of Nations. Now, we're talking about Africa and Australia and all of the other countries that were not what we call mandate powers, a part of the League of Nations. They recognized that some of these places didn't have the ability to manage themselves. And you know this was the case in Africa and even in the Middle East. They saw them as a little bit more advanced than many countries in Africa, and so they decided that the mandate powers, we're talking about France, we're talking about Russia, we're talking about, of course, the United States was in it. These are some of the major ones, and these countries were supposed to oversee management or administration of the countries that weren't part of the League of Nations. So we see the same thing going on now. We know that systems, they don't become extinct for the most part. If they don't become extinct, they transform into something else that allows them to maintain the original function. So we see that going on here, and that's why I said what I said. It doesn't make a difference what face the American government shows. They're still going to conserve their original nature. So I don't see it going right, and pretty much things are going to pretty much remain the same. They may look a little different, but they are going to remain or maintain their original function. Is the top hurdle American Indians have, is it a political, economic, or cultural one? The top hurdle, what is it, political, economic, or cultural? Or is it something else?
No, I mean, American Indian people, we don't separate those. None of those are separate. And we refer to it as, we say, Lakowi Choha, which is a way of life, because our political decisions are based on how we, you know, our cultural, how we are structured culturally. In a sense, so, you know, it's like, so those aren't separated, but those are all pretty much all the top tier in a sense that, you know, culturally, where are we at culturally? And I mean, you know, that's one of the things today is that, you know, I always be mindful, and I always tell Indian people, especially in the state of Ohio, I said, you know, you're the problem. You are the problem in a sense that when you allow these things to happen within the communities and allow these things to exist, then I said, you are the problem, because I said, this creates difficulty for Native people who are still living on reservations, who are trying to maintain, not only are they trying to maintain the language, but I said, you know, their spirituality, I said, trying to engage themselves politically on the state level, and I said, and on the federal level. I said, you know, so when you look at the, you know, even economically, how those things, so I said, we in this state, I said, we need to develop a relationship with, you know, with Native people elsewhere. And when I talk about indigenous people, see, because I'm a real strong advocate of, you know, indigenous people, and there are indigenous people all over this world, and I've been advocating for changing Columbus Day and changing it to World Indigenous Peoples Day, because in as people throughout the world, we have to go and begin to open our eyes to see what is happening in regards to this whole ideology of this new world order. And, you know, and how that is affecting, how that affects all of us. That's just like, you know, when people, you know, one time somebody had made a comment to me, and I asked him, I said, well, what kind of phone do you have? You know, I said, you know, I said, be mindful of the fact that I said, that phone that you have, I said, not only who owns that company, but I said, also too, I said, the minerals that are used to make that battery and those components. I said, where did they come from? And I said, and when you look at that history, I said, we're going back to child labor in Africa. So I said, when you begin to look at that, I said, you know, don't get a phone. I mean, like, it really bothers me, these people who get a new phone every 6 months, you know, and I'm like, why are you doing that? You know, why is it necessary for you to do that? You know, but it's about class. It's about class. And I mean, you know, and I keep telling them, I'm like, don't do that, you know, because these are the changes. This is what's happening. This is how, but we can change the world. We can change the world. And another thing, you know, you were making a comment about, you know, I don't think about the courts. Yeah, I don't think the courts are going to rule in our favor, but there's something that's happening here locally. Because what's happening here locally is that non-Indian people are really pushing the issue in regards to the pipeline, because the Rover pipeline in Ohio is at a standstill. And how that happened, because when they look at what happened, when the non-Indians here in Ohio looked at what happened in Standing Rock, they in turn turned around and used that, those tactics and those information, and utilized it and went, and they were able to stop the pipeline here in Ohio. And then they're now looking at what's happening in regards to the fracking that's happening in Wayne National Forest. So, you know, it's like, so, but it's people, we as people have to realize that together we can create our own power. It's power. People have power. But we have to go and educate ourselves in that knowledge. We have to obtain that knowledge.
Yeah, that's true. I've always, I have the belief that those who are better organized have the greatest ability to affect change. And so I've developed the motto that knowledge is power, but organization is intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Many of us don't seem to understand what organization is. You have people that have to be integrated in such a way where they are dependent upon one another. And mm-hmm. we don't seem to want to be dependent upon anyone. So that's one of the problems, is that we don't have a value system for organization. Whereas when I look at Europeans, I see a value for organization and structure.
Mm-hmm.
And so that seems to be a problem that, and I'm just going to speak for African Americans, not in all cases, we see that, but they've even developed, sociologists have even developed a theory, it's called social entropy, and where they measure advanced civilizations according to their level of organization. So if you're not very organized, and if you are very organized, you have what's called negative entropy. So it's an inverse relationship that's taking place here. And let's talk about presidential elections. How have American Indians historically voted in presidential elections?
They got really involved when Obama ran for office. And, you know, with this latest election, they you know, became very strong advocates for Bernie. And right now, this morning, as a matter of fact, I was listening to the radio station from the reservation, and they were this morning advocating that people pray, because prayer is going to be our only hope in dealing with number 45.
That is funny. So everybody's calling for prayer now, huh?
Yeah. Because I mean, you know, it's like, and because, you know, it's like, and that's where we got to go. Because I mean, you know, there's got to be some hope.
Yeah.
And you know, there's got to be some hope in there, because I mean, you know, obviously, I mean, you know, when this man commits crime and they just let him get away with it. So. All righty. Well, thank you. Thanks for this opportunity.
Well, hold up. That's we got a little bit of extra time here. I want to make sure we make it through everything here. We got some extra time, so don't worry about the prompt here. I'm going to join the conversation, and I'm sure our audience is too. So did they vote? They voted for Obama, And then in the last election, they voted, you think the majority voted for Bernie Sanders.
Well, majority were trying to write in Bernie Sanders, but one of the things is that there's a thing that's happening, and it's called gerrymandering. And, I mean, you know, they like you take, for example, I come from McLaughlin, South Dakota. And in McLaughlin, South Dakota, you, of course, you know, all the native people reside out in what the public housing area, what they refer to as the housing.
Mm-hmm.
These are all government houses that were built for native people, and that's where all the Indian people live. Well, the community came and drew the line. So anybody who lives in public housing now had to go down to another town to vote. So they couldn't vote in the local election. They had to go to another town to vote. So when you got, you know, 80% of the people don't have transportation, you know, they didn't get down to, you know, the other town to vote. They couldn't make it. They didn't have transportation. So, and I mean, you know, these districts and what, and, you know, and who does these lines as far as, you know, who, where you can vote and how you, and how this whole processing. But, you know, I tell people, you know, get involved, involve yourself into what's happening politically. And become that voice and make yourself knowledgeable, because, you know, that's where we as a people, and then we have to, you know, really get involved and also take a strong look at who's doing what and how they're doing it. Because, you know, there's at one time there was a strong political voice, you know, there was a poison, but now, I mean, you know, it's like the party lines have taken over. I mean, you know, it's like, There aren't any real Democrats or Republicans anymore. And I mean, you know, when you look at, you know, they're not there. And I mean, you know, it's, you know, I've really lost faith in the Democratic Party. And I've also, you know, I've never been a Republican, but even as Republicans, even they themselves have changed in a sense that who's in control, and it's corporations that are in control of the Republican Party. It's money. It's all about money.
That's true. That's true. That's a large part of it. But the people are able, when they get tired enough, they will revolt.
Oh, yeah.
And we're seeing a lot of that, too. And that's why I want to look at my next show, The Rise of Global Nationalism, because it's really a revolt. And I know Karl
mm-hmm.
Marx, he wrote about that. He termed it as conflict theory. And
mm-hmm.
he was talking about the different social constitutions that people make up. It doesn't make a difference what kind of social organization you have. Ultimately, it will tend towards something that's further to the left, towards socialism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we look at Russia during the times of the czars, we're looking at a capitalist society. And then, of course, we had a revolution there, and they overthrew the czar, and the next thing you know, we have socialism. And this big power, the former Soviet Union, vying for competition all over the world. And then even with that, we look during the days of this is during the days of Reagan. And I can't think of the president of the USSR at that time. We had Perestroika. And so we're looking at social reforms over there, and they became more liberal and started to take some of the public entities and give them out to their friends and they became private concerns. And so we see a lot of billionaires in what we refer to as Russia these days. And we see a lot of the billionaires, it looks like, as far as I can see, they don't have boundaries in terms of where they do business. So we can see a President Trump, who's supposedly a billionaire, doing business over with Russian billionaires. And so I don't think he's going to be there that long. I think they're going to get him for money laundering, and we're going to end up with Gerald Ford. That's my comparison. Mike Pence, I think, is going to end up taking the place of President. I call him President Trump, by the way, and he's.
Mm-hmm.
I see Mike Pence as a modern day Gerald Ford. So he's
mm-hmm.
not going to be that popular. He's probably just going to be there until the next election, and then we're going to have somebody else vying for the job. I don't know who that might be, who's gonna rise above the fray with that. But that's what I think is what's gonna happen there. I did want to talk about explain how the reservation system has affected American Indians. And is it, here's a larger question, is it able to survive alongside political subdivisions of the state?
And the reservation systems were designed for Native people to fail. And that's one of the things is that when you begin to look at that, and as far as in regards to the state, on the state level, I mean, you know, the states have always been a problem. And in relationships with Native people, because, you know, economically, you know, they've always been in competition. And, you know, and it's like, and because of that competition, I mean, you know, it's, you see a lot of things that, it, you know, there's very open racism that exists. And I mean, you know, and it's like in how those things happened. I mean, that's just like, you know, I couldn't understand why so many people here were so against the Violence Against Women Act. And, you know, and I'm like, you know, take a look at the reservations, because, you know, what happened for years and years and years is that because of the way they set the system up, you had white men, 88% of the cases that took place on reservations in regards to rape, and, you know, 3 out of every 4 Native female experiences that, and 88% of those crimes were committed by white men. But nothing could be done because of, you know, jurisdiction. As far as, you know, the tribal police, the Indian police could not arrest white men. And when, you know, the only ones that could arrest them were state police, and the state came in basically, you know, once again, they demeaned the Indian women in the sense that, oh, they were drunk or they were asking for it. And so then charges were never taken place. So, you know, so white men viewed reservations as their own little playground.
Mm-hmm.
And they would come in and they would, you know, do these acts. And it wasn't until just a few years ago when they finally changed, it was under Obama's administration that law changed. You know, so now you have, you know, so, and it's still, they're still, the states are still arguing about that, because Indian police can now arrest non-Indians and charge them in their court system, because we do have our own court system.
And that was because of Obama.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it was under the Obama administration. I mean, you know, he recognized that and, you know, the problem that was taking place. And I mean, you know, when you look at, you know, like I said, you know, the number of Indian women that were being affected.
That's,
and, you know,
right.
It's like, and, yeah. And I mean, you know, it's even now the number of women that are still missing. I mean, you know, it's like there's something like 64,000.
64,000,
you know, that
American
are missing.
Indian women missing.
Mm-hmm. That's just like, you know, right here in this region. I mean, you know, right up here down the road here, and there's a young lady that they still have in the morgue up in Miami County, because it's an ongoing investigation. She's still in the morgue, but she's Native American, and they found her body along the interstate. There was another body they found down here in Louisville, Kentucky, laying along the interstate, and that young lady, she's Native American, but I mean, you know, the perpetrator, not only did he physically assault her, but he also shot her in the head. And then he scalped her, which was a very clear message. But, you know, the state, you know, we're trying to get them to recognize it as a hate crime, because the scalping, you know, that was a clear message.
That's true.
And so, but the state will not recognize it as a hate crime. And so, once again, and I've been advocating, you know, for people to, you know, push this to the federal level, because the state isn't recognizing it as a hate crime, but the federal government needs to intervene. But we can't get the federal government to intervene because we just, you know, because of certain legal jurisdiction laws.
Yeah. and women just aren't regarded, especially in this administration here, women aren't regarded on the same level as men are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and so I look at it as, and I use the word conservative. I was very deliberate in using that. It seems as though conservation laws are universal laws. And in the natural world, of course, you know, we have the conservation of energy. We have the conservation of momentum. And there's some others, but it seems that those laws apply in the social sphere as well. And I'm seeing a case here where people, they don't really want to change.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking about LGBT rights and how they're coming to the forefront. And Obama was very significant, too, in advancing their rights.
Mm-hmm.
And we're looking at American Indians, we're looking at African Americans and other so-called minorities, and we see that we're still trying to make the advances that historically we've always been trying to improve our light in this so-called Democratic Republic. But we see that even with that, many of us, at least the mainstream, does not want to change. They want to maintain things as they are. So European culture, at least from my understanding of it, and I do like to study the different cultures, is that women have always been second class. And we even see when we think about the scripture, we talk about the Trinity, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. Now, if we go back to the time of Egypt, we knew that ghost was a woman.
Mm-hmm.
See, you had father, mother, and child.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, the mother was replaced with a ghost.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm even thinking about American Indian culture here. There was a ghost dance.
Mm-hmm.
You familiar
which is illegal, by the way.
With the ghost dance. Tell the audience about the ghost dance, the American Indians and the ghost dance. What does that represent?
The ghost dance was the result of missionaries coming to the Indian people and teaching the Bible. Because when the Indian people looked at the Bible and the teachings of Jesus Christ, and they saw the white people as being evil, and so that they gravitated to this, so they really gravitated and wanted the second coming of Jesus to come. Mm-hmm. So they wanted that because they knew that if when Jesus comes back, and I mean they themselves again because the whole ideology of that that the poor will rise, that the less fortunate will rise. So they saw that, and that all that is evil will be wiped off the face of the earth. So Indian people says, well, when this man comes back, then all the white people will disappear because they saw them as an evil entity. And so that was where the ghost dance originated. And of course, in the Bible it says to sing on to the Lord. And so they would sing.
So
they would sing on to the Lord.
Illegal. You said it was illegal. Who was?
Yeah, it's still illegal.
It's illegal from whose standpoint?
It's illegal by the federal government. This does not allow the ghost dance to be performed.
Okay, and
so this country is founded on freedom of religion, but here were Indian people who had converted to Christianity. And they themselves, so this was their way of, practicing that theology in regards to the Abrahamic faith.
Okay.
And I mean, so that was one of the things that, when I tell people, I'm like, I said the ghost dance was a result of the Bible being introduced to Native people.
Okay.
Because,
we're at the end of our show. I want to thank you for enlightening our audience today. We really appreciate you taking some time out of your day to join us and enlighten us on these issues. Also, would like to call your attention to the shows that we're going to have later on in the evening. Tune in to more informative, thought-provoking broadcasts on AM 360 this evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Maya Ala Kali Hall with Ayman Abdul Aziz. This is Marlon Aldridge, and welcome you back next Monday for our discussion, The Rise of Global Nationalism, same place, same time, same intellectual stimulation. Spread the word about the show and follow me on Facebook. Until next time, peace be on you. Thanks, guys.
All right.